How's it going, guys? Time for another edition of Strictly Business here on the Ad Free Shows and Podcasts E-Networks. I'm John Alba. You know that already, but I know what you're all here for. You're here for the man of the hour himself, Mr. Eric Bischoff. What's up, brother? How you doing? Another edition of Strictly Business. What's going on, man? You're on the road?
Yeah, Mrs. B and I are in Salt Lake City, Utah, here for a couple days, and then heading to Cave Creek, Arizona, for a little bit of sunshine absorption. By the absorption, having a hard time talking this morning. By the way, that music is like really cheesy 70s porno music. Not that I was spending a lot of time with porn in the 70s, although I did tip my toe in the water just a bit.
Just a little bit.
That is some really cheesy music. I think we're going to have to work on updating that music. I don't know who put that together, but that is just cheesy as all get out.
Well, we're a bit of a work in progress here sometimes on Strictly Business. And
hey, we've got music. That's a big step forward. Right. That's a leap into the future.
100%. And listen, there's nothing wrong with being a work in progress. Sometimes even your business is a work in progress. And our friends over at Impera want to help you out. You're going to hear more about them in just a little bit. But you head to Impera.com/Eric and use that code WrestleBiz. You'll get 20% off your subscription and 14 days for free. We got more on them coming up in just a little bit here on Strictly Business. So you're out on the road, Eric. Last week, we got a chance to talk about the WWE sale in depth. And I'm happy to share that next week, a little teasery, we're going to have on one of the most credible sports media analysts in the world on our show. And should we reveal who it's going to be, or should we leave that as an open-ended tease?
Oh, no. Reveal. Okay. Show them everything.
Well, we got Richard Deitch from The Athletic, formerly of Sports Illustrated, coming on next week. He is one of the most in-tune sports media analysts out there, and he's a huge, huge, huge Eric Bischoff fan. When I extended the invite, I think he marked out a little bit. So, going to be
it'll be fun, interesting, and educational conversation. And Mr. Deitch will indeed be enlightening us. And I love that because we spend so much time enlightening our audience. It's great to be enlightened along the way by somebody else who knows more than we do about certain things. And that'll be the case.
No doubt about that. And Eric and I are going to take a dive into the AEW realm here today on Strictly Business. In the meantime, if you're not a subscriber, guys, to adfreeshows.com, what are you waiting for? Get in on all the goodies there and all the fun. We'll have an update on what's cooking over on adfreeshows.com in just a little bit here on Strictly Business. We're also live right now for the Ad Free Shows Top Guys. If you are watching Eric and I live, leave us a comment. Leave us a question. Maybe we'll get a chance to venture into it here on this edition of Strictly Business. So, Eric, I think we should hop right into it here, man. This has been the talk of the town this week in pro wrestling, specifically as we record this on Wednesday and Thursday. CM Punk, who has not been seen on AEW television since the all-out incident, brawl-out as dubbed by some. It sounds, according to several reports, including from our friend Sean Ross Sapp, that he may be back in the fold here in AEW in the very near future. According to Fightful, he has informed those around him that they're targeting the June 21st episode of AEW Dynamite, which will come to us from Chicago for his impending return. A polarizing figure in his own right, someone you've chimed in quite a bit on. Your initial reaction to these reports that seem to be gaining quite a bit of traction here?
Don't give a fuck.
Straight up.
Straight up. Who cares? This is just such drama for the sake of drama. You know, it's a good thing that this drama is actually taking place because there's nothing worthwhile watching AEW for. It is what it is, and if you're a fan of AEW, God bless you. Go with God. Enjoy the product. But it's flat. It's boring. It's just there's nothing going on except for the drama outside of the ring. If Tony Khan had the ability to somehow manufacture a fraction, a small fraction, an infinitesimal amount of the drama that's taking place outside his company and figure out a way to integrate it inside of his television product, it would be another situation, but it's not. when the drama outside of your company far exceeds the drama that you're able to create inside your company, if you're a scripted wrestling company, you've got a problem. And I think this is indicative of a much bigger problem. The fact that, look, CM Punk's got leverage, right? Two of the cosplay executive members of the executive committee, whatever they were, executive vice presidents, got into a physical confrontation with them. CM Punk's got leverage. God bless him for using it. I don't blame him. He's a smart guy. I don't particularly think he's that talented. I think he's overblown. I think he's highly overrated. I think he's been able to manage and create this persona that has somehow survived, and good for him for doing that. That's an art form in and of itself. But in terms of what he can actually deliver in the ring, we've seen it. We've experienced it. It's not nearly as, it doesn't live up to the hype of CM Punk. But hey, he's got leverage. You know, he's probably got a multi-million dollar lawsuit waiting in the wings and attorneys that are more than willing to go after that. You know, he's probably getting a check every month. I don't know what Tony's paying him. I've heard numbers ranging from $4 million to $7 million a year. So while he's waiting in the wings for Tony to figure out what Tony's going to do and the attorneys representing Tony, he's got all the leverage and he's taking advantage of it. And wrestling fans are right there and they're waiting for him. They're there for him. So it is what it is. I think when he comes back, it'll make a lot of noise. Everybody in the AEW world will be foaming at the mouth and frothing at the bit and can't wait. And they're all excited. In a month later, things will be right back to where they are right now, which is an average viewing audience of 850 to 900,000 people. And nobody will give any more of a damn 6 months from now than they do today. That's my take.
Not holding back, as Eric Bischoff typically does not do. So
you ask me the questions. You got to be careful when you ask me certain questions because you know you're going to get an honest answer. Maybe I may not be right, but I am honest.
That's what people love about you, Eric Bischoff, EZE. Listen, man, I understand your perspective on that. I will push back in this regard. Wrestling tends to be most interesting when we are blending elements of real life into it to create these compelling stories and storylines and story arcs. You yourself know that the NWO was built on blending elements of reality into telling this great story. Would you agree or disagree that there is an opportunity to capitalize on something that was very much in the real life realm to create a great story that could bring viewers in wherever this story unfolds on AEW television?
Not with the current brain trust involved in creative at AEW, I don't. That would take imagination and cooperation. That's the other thing. You know, because I'm not involved, I don't have a dog in the hunt. I really don't give two shits whether CM Punk goes back to AEW or not. It's not going to affect my life one way or the other. But if I did care, which I don't, I would have to ask myself how honest is CM Punk about coming back? How willing is CM Punk to kind of mend the fences that were torn down not that long ago? And if I were the type of person to give CM Punk the benefit of the doubt, by the way, his name is Phil. I don't call him CM Punk. It's fucking stupid. His name's Phil, Phil Brooks. If Philip were to wake up one day and say, you know what, this is kind of a messed up situation. This is not the way I wanted to go out of the industry, blah, 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 blah. I think I want to come back. Would the first thing you would expect him to do be to bury Chris Jericho and to continue to bury other members of AEW roster, which is what he did just a week or two ago? So how sincere, how honest is he, Philip, about making amends and making things work? It's stupid. the people involved are equally as stupid for engaging in this, knowing that the outcome is going to be pretty much the same as it's been. It's just, I don't know. It's, hey, go forward. You know, we all love watching a good train wreck, right? That's probably a bad way to say it. We all love watching a good demolition derby. Demolition derby has been at the core of every state fair since probably cars were invented. And demolition derbies are fun because cars just bang into each other and they tear each other up and nobody really gets hurt. And, you know, at the end of it, you've got one beat up old jalopy that's worth about $75 spinning around in the dirt track, celebrating a win. That's what this is. This is a demolition derby. And people love watching demolition derbies, and the people will love watching this demolition derby. But when it's done, it'll be over with, and you're stuck with the same product you've been stuck with for a long time, with a talent that is highly overrated and very, very limited.
There's a lot to borrow a Conrad term, there's a lot to unpack there, but... I guess the way that I look at it is trying to take the optimistic point of view on it, where I recognize that there was so much buzz around what happened that there is just such an opportunity to capture something that could really, really, really invigorate your program in a way that even in the short term, you're capturing eyes that you may have lost and hoping to leverage that into sustained viewership. When CM Punk came into the
company, It's a lot of hope there, Mr. Elba. You're reaching into the clouds, grasping at unicorns. Yeah, that would be, and I don't mean to interrupt you, brother. I'm sorry. Keep going.
No. I mean, listen, I have no stake in AEW whatsoever. It does not matter to me at the end of the day whether AEW grabs more viewers or not. I want to see that for the sake of the industry. That's good for the health of the industry. If more eyes are being brought in, that's awesome. That means more opportunities for talent, etc. But I just feel like, Eric, we haven't seen an instance like this in a very long time in pro wrestling, where it was so widely recognized that something so heated occurred. And with how these stars have aligned, now there is an opportunity to capitalize on that. I want to read more from Sean's report here. He says that Fightful's told that there's also a meeting planned between CM Punk and Chris Jericho, that you alluded to them having some issues before, to see if the two working together is a possibility. You've known Chris Jericho a very long time, and I think it's undoubtable that Chris Jericho has a very, very high standing ground in AEW. Knowing Chris in the way that you do, what's your perspective on the willingness to maybe do business in a situation like that, given his professional past?
I think first and foremost, Chris Jericho is a businessman and a good one. He's very smart. He's got a lot of experience. And while he may not have danced this particular dance before, this is pretty unusual, even in the world of the unusual world of professional wrestling. This is pretty freaking unusual. But even still, you know, Chris has been around long enough now and has seen enough and been involved in enough that he's got great judgment, and I think he'll exercise that judgment. He also has leverage. There's also a limit to what Chris Jericho needs to do in his career. I'm pretty certain when I say Chris is financially more than secure, so are his children, so are his children's children in all likelihood. So, you know, at this stage of Chris Jericho's career, how does he want it to end? Does he want it to end in a dance with an unpredictable, emotionally unstable, self-centered kind of, I don't know, moderate talent? However popular that moderate talent may be, He's an average talent, slightly above average at best. Is that how does Chris want to risk his career, or at least this stage of it, the end of it? Because he is entering the end of his career. When I say that, it may be the end of Chris's career. It may be like the Kiss farewell tour that started in 1992. I don't know. You know, it's Chris Jericho. Anything is possible. Yeah. But, you know, you'd have to, no matter how much of a Chris Jericho fan you are, and I am a big Chris Jericho fan, you have to admit this guy's probably on the tail end of his career. Does he want to get in the mud with this cat? Who, I don't know. I don't trust him. I wouldn't trust him. Am I going to sit down and try to have a meeting of the minds with a guy who, as recently as 2 weeks ago, decided to bury me publicly? I wouldn't waste my time. I wouldn't spend 5 minutes of my day sitting down next to somebody who, as recently as 2 weeks ago, decided to do the same thing that created this mess in the first place, all while saying, I'm kind of interested in coming back. That's not story. That's just childish. It's immature, unprofessional actions by a guy that has made a career of it in Phil Brooks. So I don't know. If I'm Chris Jericho, I wouldn't go near it. But hey, you know, Chris is an independent spirit. He may look at this completely different than I am looking at it. Chris may be looking at this as a way to turn a negative into a positive. It's possible. And that would be a feather in Chris's cap if he was able to do that. I don't know. You know, I don't know Chris well enough to know which side of that coin he's going to fall on. I know I wouldn't take the risk of getting into the mud with this guy again. He's proven. He's a proven commodity. And it's not somebody that I'd want to be in business with. If I was Tony, I'd just eat the whatever it is, however many millions of dollars a year he's paying, just pay the cat off and chalk it up as a learning experience. Because you're going to keep learning one way or the other. You're either going to pay this cat off and learn a hard lesson and move on with your life, or you're going to let this festering wound continue to infect the rest of your business going forward, and you're still paying him. So I don't get it. I don't get it.
We got Top Gal Lindsay in here saying, hello, gentlemen. Miss you both. We miss you, Lindsay.
Lindsay, we miss you too, girl. How are you?
We got Mike Gallagher in here as well. Good to hear from you,
I don't
you,
miss Mike.
Mike
as much as I miss Lindsay. No offense, Mike.
Big pop for me on that one. Listen, you brought up a very interesting point about your return on investment, right? When you invest that much money in a talent, what is your return on investment going to be? And there's no doubting that Tony Khan and higher powers of AEW invested quite a bit in bringing CM Punk in, both financially and in equity. This is a guy that beat Hangman Page, a guy they set up to be world champion. He beat him clean in the middle of the ring to become their champion. And then he also beat Jon Moxley, a guy who had a ton of equity in his own right in AEW, to give him this opportunity to be world champion. And then he, as we know, he got hurt, and then the All Out incident as well. There is one thing that I will push back on what you said, and it's that when Punk debuted, and for those first few months of his run before he got hurt in May of last year, in the spring of last year, viewership was up for Dynamite.
By how much?
When Punk debuted, as we've covered on this show, they were treading in that 1.4 territory for the first few shows.
For the first show, let's be accurate. Well, and within 3 weeks, where did they end up?
They were still around 1 million, and on the positive side.
Around 1 million now. My point is, I'm sorry, I interrupted you again.
I'm so sorry. You're okay. I just want to say is that, you know, live attendance was up as well with CM Punk in his return, and then it has fallen back quite a bit since then. You would have to think that there'd be some sort of boost that would come with bringing him back in the short term, especially with that All-In show coming to Wembley, where, I don't know, Eric is using logic here, it feels like having CM Punk on the marquee for an international show, your biggest show ever that you've ever done, seems like a no-brainer that you'd want
him. No, and hey, that I agree with, and that'll probably be the tipping point for young Tony Khan is, wait a minute, I've got this big, because there's a lot of pressure on Tony. And as I talked about with you last week, I think Wembley's going to do great with or without Punk. I would prefer, if I was Tony Khan, to do it without Punk, because that makes a real statement, right? Who drew the house? Did AEW draw the house, or did CM Punk draw the house? If I was Tony Khan, strategically looking forward, I would absolutely not book CM Punk on that show. Even though I would know that doing so would ensure more sales. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't sell my soul to that piece of garbage. I just wouldn't do it. I wouldn't compromise my company. I wouldn't dilute my leverage as a brand, depending on a guy who 6 months ago absolutely buried my company while I was sitting right next to him, acting like a petulant 14-year-old piece of garbage. No, I wouldn't do it. Even though I know that putting CM Punk on the card would ensure a much better turnout. Hey, I got an idea. Book CM Punk and Bill Goldberg. You want to book something that's going to sell at Wembley? Book that. Bill Goldberg's last match against CM Punk. Dare ya. Dare ya. Grab your balls, TK. Go with it. Dare ya.
Fascinating. For the record, I know we like kind of talked about this a few weeks ago. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Bill Goldberg shows up in AEW.
No, I don't either. I said this a couple weeks ago. If Bill is money motivated, and he could be, I don't think he needs the money. But guys like Bill aren't about needing the money. It's about wanting the money. And if Bill decides, hey, a couple million bucks to show up over in Wembley, thrash Phil Brooks around a little bit, prove to everybody what he really is and isn't, I'd take it. Who wouldn't? It'd be fun.
I don't know if it'll be
fun. Go over to UK, probably get a private jet. TK probably fly him over there, right? Roll out the red carpet, hang all over him, give him all kinds of big hugs, say wonderful things about him, give him $2, $3, $4 million, whatever, fly him over there in a private jet. Who wouldn't do that? I would in a heartbeat.
Is Goldberg a hug guy? He doesn't strike me as much of a hug guy.
A couple million bucks, he'll hug you. I don't think he's going to give you a handy, but he'll give you a hug.
It's good stuff there, Eric. Question from Top Guy Brian. He says, is there too much dependence on Punk from an AEW side? Does AEW feel Punk is more of a draw than the rest of their roster? And before you answer that, I'll ask you to elaborate from your experience. Was there ever a time you felt that your roster was too dependent on one person?
It's a great question, Brian. And I think it goes back to my position early on in this conversation, is I wouldn't compromise my company or my roster or my brand depending on Phil Brooks. I just wouldn't do it. I would want my roster and my company to be responsible for the success over at Wembley, or even going forward beyond Wembley, not proving to the world that I am beholden and dependent upon one individual who is at the very least unprofessional and, in my opinion, highly, highly, highly overrated and overvalued. So yes, I think there is too much dependence on the idea of Punk coming in. It's what's driving the discourse around AEW right now. Nobody's talking about anything else that's going on in AEW. Nobody else gives a shit. The only thing they're talking about is CM Punk. That's, to me, that's bad business. If that's the only thing people are talking about in your company after you've been around for 4 years and have brought in the level of talent that you brought in and making the moves that you're trying to make, and all anybody wants to talk about is this piece of garbage, I think that's a bad reflection on your company. And yes, you are too dependent on this one individual, and I think it's a mistake. It's one of the reasons I feel as strongly as I feel about it and why I reacted the way I did early on in this conversation. Now, was there, your second part of your question, was there a time when WCW became too dependent on any one personality or character? I think that's a fair question. And I think the honest answer is probably yes. You know, I think at one point in time, we probably did hang so much of our future on Hulk Hogan that it was very, very risky. Same could probably be said about the NWO once it got hot, probably 97, late 97. Probably too much dependence on the NWO, of which Hulk Hogan was a part. So kind of one and the same. That is a fair observation, and the honest answer is yes.
What did you learn from that?
Not to do it. Not to do it. What did you learn? Little Billy, you put your hand on the hot stove and I know it hurt. What did you learn? Don't put my hand on the hot stove.
Crazy. Some people would say they learned to put a glove on instead of putting the hand on the hot stove directly, you know? Yeah, listen, that's all interesting. And I'll say this. I know you're not watching the product every week. I really think that the AEW main event scene right now is like actually really good. And the story that they're telling with the four pillars of Sammy Guevara, Darby Allin, Jungle Boy, Jack Perry, and MJF being involved in this one cohesive feud with different layers and Sting.
So why mess it up? So why, if you're right, you're right. I haven't been watching it, and I will. It's not, I'm not watching because I'm a, you know, I don't want to watch AEW. I'm not watching because I got shit to do on Wednesday nights, but I do tape it and I'll go back and watch. And let's just assume what you're saying is true. And you've got a good eye. You've been a wrestling fan for a long time. Why would you mess that up? Why, now that you've finally got your ship somewhat balanced, right? You've gone through your garbage with MJF. That was equally as bad, but it's behind you. MJF is a team player. He's a company guy. He's proven himself over the last few months. You've got, if you're correct, and I'm just going to give you the benefit of the doubt, you've got a great story, a cohesive story between four people. Why would you want to fuck that up?
Well, in theory, if this CM Punk return were to happen in June, I would imagine this feud will have been blown off at the May Double or Nothing pay-per-view at that point. But still, there's something to follow up with, obviously. And listen, Punk could easily slide right back into something with MJF, hypothetically, because that's where the story set off with him at the All Out pay-per-view. And MJF was clearly going to be feuding with CM Punk before plans change, pal. But I get what you're saying. You've got something that you can tangibly bite into. Why mess with that? I understand that. And before we talk a little bit about Impera here in just a second, I do want to add one more element of this to pick your brain on. There is the whole idea here that this third television show, which as Fightful reporting is going to be a Saturday night show that is potentially going to be a primetime show on Saturday night. Rather, you know, we had this discussions a few weeks ago about it being maybe a 6:05 show in honor of WCW. But instead, it sounds like this is going to be a primetime show. And his report, alongside some others as well, indicates that this will essentially be the CM Punk show and a way to keep talent away from each other that aren't necessarily getting along with one another. And I think, Eric, that's...
You create a television show to manage your locker room?
Right.
The process here? The world is a mess, okay? Let's just face it. The fact that we're having this conversation and that a network is talking about having a primetime show so that we can keep, you know, the people in the locker room that are too immature and unprofessional to get along, but we're going to try to put them on television in a way that we don't have to put them in the same room. Good luck. You deserve whatever you get. Turner, you're a freaking mess. You're not the company you used to be. There's executives in that company that couldn't find their ass with both hands and a compass when it comes to making a good decision. If this is the direction that they're going, good freaking luck.
Yeah, I think if that is how this ultimately plays out, and it's a big if, but if that is how it plays out.
It's a joke, and so is Turner.
I just don't know how you
can do Turner, that. I feel so bad for Ted Turner right now. I do. I wouldn't want my name on that company. I just wouldn't. Please, if I was Ted, I'd have my representatives reaching out and saying, please take my name off. Do not put my name on anything associated with this company any longer. This is just a mess. CNN was bad enough. Now they're creating a primetime show on a Saturday night, which is, by the way, no big fucking deal because nobody watches TV on a Saturday night, primetime or otherwise, right? It sounds good in a press release, but it doesn't make a damn bit of difference in real life. But if the fact that you're creating a show to help keep people away from each other, but yet get them on television. Oh, man, there's some dumbasses in Turner Broadcasting right now. If that's true.
If it's true, is the big caveat. That is the hot rumor here. And we like to live to enlighten to the best of our abilities here on Strictly Business. That, I mean, that would be.
I'm in a bad mood today, so I'm letting this shit fly. I woke up cross. I'm getting crosser by the minute. Who says cross? Who says that anymore?
Yeah, I don't think
who under the age of 90 says, I woke up cross? Well, I did. I woke up pissed off this morning. And we just happened to be doing this show, and you just happened to be sharing some of these dumbass ideas that are floating around out there in the internet, and I can't help but reacting in the most honest, natural way I can when I'm pissed off and haven't had enough coffee. Mrs. B just went down to get me some more coffee. We're sharing a hotel room. Obviously, we're sharing a hotel room, right? But she was sitting over in a bed trying to work on her computer, getting things done. She's listening to me, and she's looking over her shoulder going, man, did you have to say that? That's kind of rude, Eric, you know? And I picked up my coffee cup and said, just go get me some more coffee. Maybe I'll get nicer as I go. Doubt it, but maybe. I'm just in one of those moods today.
You could say your morale is not super intact today. And Lindsay asks, hypothetically, how much do you think backstage morale would take a hit if Punk comes back? And I'll make that more of a macro question, Eric. If there is somebody in the locker room who is divisive, and I'm asking you to speak from your experiences here, how much does that tangibly split up the locker room? Is that something that people care about, or are they generally able to put business first?
It's no different than any other work environment. If you've got somebody who's a cancer, I hate to use that word because people have to deal with cancer, but if you've got somebody who is just constantly rubbing people the wrong way, creating a negative environment, just creating hostility, dividing people within on the team, so to speak, why have them around? That's not going to create anything. It's stupid. Yes, it does create bad morale. It does. And bad morale, whether it's in a wrestling locker room or in an office environment or anywhere else, is not productive. It's counterproductive. Why do it? This guy is not saving anything. He's not going to turn AEW's business around. Is he added value? He was. He came back. He'd been off for what, 7 years? And he kept this, you know, this aura of you know, because of the pipe bomb interview. He kept this mythology alive. Good for him, by the way. Credit to Phil for that. But now we've seen it. It moved the needle for a minute, and then things settled back down in terms of television ratings. Incrementally, did it improve live events? Sure, incrementally, but enough so that it was worthwhile to have this piece of garbage bury your company while sitting next to you and bury your roster, and as recently as 14 days ago or whatever it was, continue to do the same thing, all the while suggesting that he wants to come back. Who in the right freaking mind would do that?
I do want to just add this too, that they did do their best pay-per-view buy rates with CM Punk on the card.
Who cares?
Does that matter? I'm genuinely asking. That's not me.
Who cares? Is it worth destroying your brand, making the president of the company look like a douchebag, which is what Tony looked like sitting next to CM Punk while Punk was burying Tony and his roster? Is it worth making the leader of your company look like a complete douchebag while this guy buries your entire roster going forward? Is that what you want to share with advertisers, potential sponsors? Is that how you're going to grow your business? It's insane. To me, this whole conversation is insane. I don't get it.
I think there would have to be a lot of apologies all around in order to get...
It'd have to be more than apologies. This guy would have to spend the majority of the next 18 months on his hands and knees kissing everybody's ass within eyesight.
Okay, Eric. So I want to wrap this episode of Strictly Business with a fan question. This comes from someone who has been pretty high up in the wrestling industry, and they're pretty prominent in the broadcasting industry right now. They've asked to remain anonymous in sending me this because they really want to hear your thoughts.
Chicken shit. Go ahead. Chicken
shit. They're a big fan of Strictly Business. So
that's all right. They're still chicken shit.
So I'll read this off. It says, so I would like to ask Eric if there's ever a precedent or history of finishes being purchased. And what are they referring to? Well, they're saying their theory is that instead of Roman Reigns dropping the WWE Universal Championship to Cody at WrestleMania, that essentially the Saudis have leveraged to have Roman drop the title on their soil. He tries to reckon with it by saying this number, the 1,000-day number, it would get close to that with this upcoming Saudi Arabia show in May. And that the Saudis would essentially be like, hey, we'll pay you $30 million for the show and Roman Reigns to drop the title and have you play that moment that happened here in Saudi Arabia rather than WrestleMania for years to come. Yeah, there's so many video packages over the years, right, Eric, where you get this amazing world championship win at WrestleMania. Well, the suggestion here is that we'll pay you to have someone create that historic moment on our soil. Is there ever a precedent for something like that?
I mean, if there is, I don't know of it. And maybe there is at a much, much smaller scale. Because the idea is, it's just timing. It's, forget, you know, take Saudi Arabia and all the controversy that comes along with it. Just take that out, you know, replace Saudi Arabia with Tampa, Florida, just for sake of discussion. Is there a reason why at a particular venue that making a move like that, Roman Reigns dropping or losing to someone else, from a financial perspective, has such so much more potential than doing it in Boston? So if you're a business person and you're sitting down and you're looking at your plans and you're going, wait a minute, if we do this here, it's worth X, but if we do it over here, it's worth 2X. I don't know. Have to give that some conversation, wouldn't you? Your business. You have shareholders. You have people who you are responsible to who you've never even met, like people walking up and down the street. You've got a mailman somewhere, a mailwoman somewhere who owns 300 shares of your stock. Or 100 or 2, you're responsible for that to that person to make the best financial decisions you can make when you're a publicly held company. And if there's a financial opportunity in Saudi Arabia or Tampa or Czechoslovakia or anywhere else that is so significant and has such a large impact on your bottom line and the fiduciary freaking responsibility you have to your shareholders, do you not have to have a conversation about that? Of course you do. Now, is there a precedent? I don't know. Did Vern Gagne at some point sit in a room and go, oh, I could drop the belt to this guy in Winnipeg, or I could do it in Chicago. Where am I going to make more money? I'm going to make more money in Chicago, so I'm going to do it in Chicago. I like Winnipeg, but I'm going to do it in Chicago. Is that considered a precedent? I don't know. If it is, then yeah, it's probably been done before, a version of it. But this is unique, right? I've not heard this. This is news. And it's a very interesting thought.
The analogy they used was
probable. It's a possibility, right? I mean, it's possible that this conversation is taking place.
The analogy they use, and this is a much more micro scale, is indie worker sells a bunch of tickets, suddenly they get in the main event in a opportunity to win a championship, right? Again, much more smaller scale. We're not talking that degree of money here. But it does make the wheels turn a little bit. So there was never an incident in WCW or an instance in WCW where you were booking a specific market or a specific venue, and for that reason, you were fulfilling the creative to create that big moment?
No, I never, I'll be careful about saying never. Unlikely that I ever made any significant creative decisions based on a venue. Some, sure. Insignificant decisions, absolutely. But in terms of dropping a world championship, particularly one that's been held for 1,000 days or whatever it's been, anything as significant as what we're talking about now? Absolutely not.
Well, and then there's the added element, of course, of dangling the money like a carrot there. Like, hey, you give us that moment, we'll give you a little extra
boost. And that's business. Yeah. Why would you, like I said, I know people, because there's so much, we're so polarized and tribal about everything. Not just wrestling, but everything, right? And there is certainly a large portion of the audience that is so anti-Saudi Arabia. But at the end of the day, money's money. Your shareholders are your shareholders. Your fiduciary responsibility. People have to realize that businesses make decisions for business reasons, not for fan bases who have opinions. It's a business. You know, why did Major League Baseball, you know, make the rules changes that they made this year? You know, pitch clock. And I don't know, you know, my ass from two bags of rocks when it comes to baseball, but I am aware that the pitch clock was a big deal amongst other changes that were made and has reduced the length of a game from an average of about 3 hours and 7 minutes or 3 hours and 10 minutes down to 2 hours and 38 minutes, which is good for the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a business decision that was good for the game. Now you're going to have traditional baseball loyalists that are going to be pulling their hair out and threatening never to watch baseball again. And, you know, burning people's likenesses and effigies, blah, 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 fucking blah. But guess what? It was a business decision, and it was probably a good business decision that in the long run will benefit Major League Baseball. That's how decisions are made.
I was right near Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, at the Springsteen show the other night. I was watching him rock out to Bruce. I almost brought up the pitch clock to him, but I decided not to. I like.
Are you impressed that I know how much time
the
pitch clock has knocked off the average length of Major League Baseball game? Are you kidding me? I pulled that one right out of my hat like it's been sitting there all morning. I had no idea that we were even going to have this conversation. Somehow the baseball would even come up, but here I am. I can pull that rabbit out. I can make that analogy. I can make that comparison in a way that helps the wrestling fan understand that this is indeed strictly business. How about that? That was awesome.
Whatever Wall Street Journal article you read before we came on air that told you about that time, I'm impressed, man. That was good stuff there. I don't like the runner on second rule, but that's a whole nother conversation for another day in and of itself. I want to get to one more question here from our fans before we wrap up here on Strictly Business. Bryant asks, when going into a major market like London for the first time, as AEW is, do you try and partner with local promotions or just go over based on your company name?
My experience, I can only talk about my experience.
Yeah, from your strategy.
We in WCW, we relied totally on local promoters. Local promotion was key. Now, I don't know, WWE may be different. Okay. AEW has got, and we didn't talk about this last time we brought it up, AEW going to the UK. But one of the reasons that I feel so positively, I know it sounds weird, right? That I'm positive about something in AEW. It's just that I'm honest. Right. But one of the reasons that I'm honestly positive about AEW's opportunity in the UK is, at least in small part, because I have to assume that there is some promotional infrastructure that exists, given the fact that the Khan family owns a, we'll call it a soccer team, they'll call it a football team in the UK. That inherently gives you a certain amount of reach. It gives you relationships with sports writers, with media personalities, potential sponsors. There's a lot of infrastructure that comes with owning a team in a market like the Khans do. So I think some of that is going to be beneficial to AEW and will help AEW not be totally dependent on a local promoter, but you'll still want that local promoter there, especially one that has experience with professional wrestling, because that's a different market.
Yeah, I feel like that would also help with day of sales as well. Walk up still matters. Walk up is a thing that happens to improve gates all the time across any sport or any event. So yeah, I'm with you on that. Good question there, Bryant. Good questions always from our top guys and top gals. They know what's up. Adfreeshows.com. You sign up for that, you get access to Strictly Business Plus, so much other content as well. And if you'd like to join with us here on Strictly Business and get all the love that we give an organization like Impera, you go to advertisewitheric.com. I'm not going to throw the graphic up because we still got to get that graphic fixed.
Mean it's not been fixed yet?
I haven't gotten the fixed one yet if it hasn't been fixed yet. It's kind of a running...
Dave Silva, I am coming for you, Dave. I'm coming for you.
It's a running bit at this point, so I'm with it. advertisewitheric.com. Get on board with that. You got 83 weeks. You got Strictly Business. Get your message out in front of thousands and thousands of listeners and viewers every single week and have Eric Bischoff put over your product in a way that nobody else can. I'm always impressed by how much love you give to our sponsors, Eric, and I'm sure they are as well. So hit us up, advertisewitheric.com. Eric, I know it's been a long morning for you. I know you're on the road. I know you want to spend some time with Mrs. B. Is there anything else you'd like
to do? She didn't want to spend any time with me. She's tired of me. She's been sitting here listening to me babble on and being negative for the last 60 minutes. She can't wait to get out of the freaking room. She's going, you know what? I think I'm just going to maybe head back to Cody and you stay here in Salt Lake City after listening to you babble with John Alba for the last hour.
Well, Mrs. B, I hope you have a great trip with Eric, Mrs. B, if she can hear this. Anything else you'd like to throw out there, Eric?
No, I'm done.
Okay, he's done. This has been Strictly Business with Eric Bischoff. We'll see you next time right here on Ad Free Shows and the Podcast E Network.